This is When Spirit Calls, and you on your journey are in the right place. This show is about magic, miracles, and meaning shared through stories, interviews, and channeled messages. We have so much to share about who you are and your divine mission here on the earth. Let's get to it. When Spirit Calls is right now.
Our inspirational guest today is the lovely Ali Stone. Ali Stone is a renowned leader in the hospitality industry with nearly two decades of experience. As an entrepreneur since 2005, Ali has played a pivotal role in developing 15 successful businesses, building and scaling them into 40 million a year enterprises. Her journey had her focus on leadership, development, and culture, leading her to master the art of forging genuine connections and driving long-term business success through authentic leadership. Currently, she's at the helm of The Inspired Leader, and Ali is dedicated to the transformational practice of bringing humanity back into the heart of business. She's speaking my language. Her mission is to revolutionize leadership by inspiring and empowering individuals and organizations to unlock their untapped potential through embracing a culture of authenticity and connection. Ali offers three primary services: executive coaching, keynote speaking, and workshop facilitation, each designed to unlock impactful leadership and meaningful change. In 2022, Ali was honored with the Transformational Leader Award by the Universal Women's Network. Additionally, in 2024, she was nominated for numerous awards in Alberta and the country. She is also a certified meditation teacher, a HeartMath resilience mentor, and an ICF certified coach working towards her master's certification. When she's not busy inspiring leaders, Ali loves practicing yoga, exploring the outdoors with her husband and two dogs, and finding joy in the simple moments of life. And if you ever need a restaurant recommendation, Ali is your go-to, having traveled all over the world in search of amazing food and hospitality experiences. Please join me in welcoming Ali to our show today. Well, hello, everyone. Here we are back again on another episode of When Spirit Calls. You guys know me. I'm always excited about our guests, but I'm extra, extra excited about our guests today because I recently met this beautiful woman at an event. I had the privilege of watching her speak and doing some exercises as well that she had brought. And I just thought, this is a woman that speaks to my heart. So, Ali, welcome.
Thank you, Jan. I'm so excited to be here. I also want to say I felt the same. Like, I felt this connection to you. I loved your session, too. We were at the Beaumont Wellness Retreat, and it was just such a magical experience. I think there's often a lot of facilitators and really great people, but I just had this, like, instant connection with you. So when you asked me if I wanted to be on your podcast, I was like, yes.
So I'm so glad that you felt that, because I felt that kindred soul sister connection, and I am thrilled. So we're going to dive right in, because I know our audience is oftentimes waiting for, okay, what does she do and how does she get there? So will you give us your backstory? Because I know you have a really special story, and I really want people to hear the message behind a story that you have. So I'm going to let you take it away. I'm going to zip my mouth here. And I'm just going to let you take the floor. Tell us your story, Ali.
Okay. Sounds good. It's a big open floor. So, I mean, I guess there's so many different angles or ways we could look at the story, but I'll kind of start back in the beginning. So I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I've been running businesses since I was 22 years old. I got involved with the original Joe's Restaurant Group. I don't know. Isn't that cool?
Wow.
See, more kindred spirit.
Right? Like, I was 22 when I started my journey. So I love that you started at the same time. There we go.
So yeah, like a baby, you understand, like, really new to the world, not really understanding what it takes to run a business. And so we got involved in the original Joe's Restaurants, as I was saying. And that franchise over the next decade, kind of unbeknownst to us at that time, was going to go through, like, explosive growth. And at the end of that decade, we were going to find ourselves, when I say ourselves, my husband and I were partners and we had, like, a third partner. We're going to find ourselves with, like, 17 units under our belt. So we were going to go from, you know, 20 team members to 550 and build this, like, this organization, right? This, something I never would have even envisioned at 22 years old. And that journey was hard, let's say, but also so rewarding. I learned so much about myself, leadership, business, what it meant to show up as a woman in the world. And I think when I first started on that journey, I was quite guarded, right? I really felt like I had to show up a certain way. I had to have a certain armor on. I was supposed to have all of the answers. And when I really started to recognize that I didn't have to be that way and that I could be authentic, I think that's when everything really started to shift and wow. change for me. And so I had this really magical experience, especially for like the last 10 years of my career with Original Joe's. So my husband kind of ended up being almost like the director of operations. I ended up being the director of leadership development and culture. So I just got to help people identify their skills, their talents. I got to craft these different leadership workshops all around like people, culture, trust, connection. Because of course we're in hospitality, right? So this is
so fun.
Oh my gosh. It was so fun. And I mean, let's be honest, some of it was crap and some of it was amazing, right? And it was all like a learning curve for me to like figure out what is the message that's important to me? How do I hope to help other people see the world through this lens of hospitality and beauty and connection, right? And so it was really, really incredible. And if you would have asked me then, you know, if I would have ever left Original Joe's or like how I felt about my job, I would have always said that I felt like I had so much purpose in what I did. I was so connected on like a heart level. I woke up every day, I was excited to go to work. And it was like living a little fairy tale, living a little dream, right? And almost like a little bubble that you yeah. just think would never end, right? But it did. And it ended in a pretty intense way, which I know some of the story, but we'll share it with your listeners. So in 2018, over the years, as we kind of grew through Original Joe's, one thing that happened with my husband was he became a competitive marathon runner. So we ended up traveling all over the world for these marathons. And that was a really cool adventure too. Like I've been at the finish line of Boston like 6 times. I always say I was there the year of the bombings. Like I have crazy moments and stories. Yeah. Around marathons. Like, and just like the energy. Like, have you ever been in a marathon finish line?
I did like a 5K run, but that was the extent of my, like, you know, that's not a full marathon in any way, but like, so yeah. I don't know that world super well.
Okay. Well, there is some sort of like real palpable energy in the air when you bring a bunch of people together who have worked really hard to accomplish something. And now is like the moment. And I don't know, but like often like tears are shed, you make new friends, there's hugs, like all of these things, right? So it's been like just really incredible experience getting to this. And I'm not really a runner. I ran halves for a little while and then I injured myself and I was like, I like sitting on the sidelines. So I went back there.
And cheerleader.
I was like, it's more my space and that's okay. I can own that. But anyway, so my husband got to a point where he decided he wanted to run all 7 of the world major marathons, which is a really big deal.
That is huge.
We got to the point where he had run 5. And so 6 and 7 were Tokyo and Berlin. And so he decided in 2018 that he wanted to run Tokyo. Now, I'd never been to Asia at this point in my life. So this was like a really big trip and a long trip, right? To run a marathon. Yeah. And we went over there and Chris is my husband's name. He had been training. So at this point, he's training insane times. So he was training to run a sub 2-hour and 30-minute marathon. So for people listening who know about that, it's like sprinting an entire, like it's actually kind of gross to watch. That doesn't even happen. It's like a freak of nature, but it's almost like Olympic time running, right? And so he was running like with these elites and having this really cool experience. And so he was trying to run, break this barrier of 2 hours and 30 minutes. He ran the marathon in Tokyo in 2 hours and 32 minutes, which is still freaking amazing.
Oh, so amazing.
Oh my God. So that night we went out and we were celebrating. And then the night after the marathon, I woke up in the middle of the night in the hotel and he was in a coma in the bed beside me. And I think the only reason I woke up was because I was freezing. I was like, I felt like I was shivering in the bed. And then when I kind of touched my body, I realized that I was soaking wet. And as I kind of like reached around and fumbled and tried to turn the lights on, I realized that it was him. And then I was like, hey, and he didn't wake up. And then it was the shake. He was like, right. And it was the whole, then it turned into the whole terrifying, petrifying situation where now we have a medical emergency, and not just a medical emergency in a foreign country where you don't speak the language.
Oh my gosh. I'm like full of shivers. Like I felt such a visceral feeling in your recognition that he wasn't awake and that cold energy was coming from his lifeless body next to yours.
Oh, right?
It
gives me the shivers even just to think about it. And like brings me back to that moment and just like the sheer panic that set in. But also, Deanna, and I think you'll probably like connect with this, I had trained myself in my life to show up as the leader. And so I went into, what would you call it? Survival mode, right? Oh, and I was like, get him to a hospital, do this, do this. And so it became like going through the steps. I remember I walked into the emergency room in Tokyo and they're bringing Chris in. And I was like, we need help, whatever. And they're all talking to me in Japanese. I was like, I need a translator. I need somebody who can speak English. And they're pointing to this machine. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I realized that I have to put my credit card into a machine that is all in Japanese before they will even look at my husband. And I'm like, and so I remember putting it in and just pointing to somebody and being like, just do it. Like I couldn't. And that was how that went. And so it was a crazy experience. Luckily, not too long after we were there, he came conscious. He woke up, but it became clear really quickly that something had shifted. So he was fine in his body. He was able to actually stand up and move around, but neurologically, he had no idea where we were. He had no idea he'd ran a marathon. He was just completely confused.
Oh my.
The word I would use would be delirious.
Wow.
So that was also petrifying when that started happening. It was like this whole other layer of what was going on. So that day in Japan, they ran like every test on him, even up to like a PET scan, an MRI, a CT, a pulse work, like everything. And I remember the ER doc sitting me down at the end of the day and he's like, we know something's wrong with your husband. We know. But he's like, we can't identify anything. We can't find anything wrong. And he's like, this might be unconventional advice, but you have a couple of options here. He's like, number one, this day in emergency has probably cost you $30,000. He's like, so I don't know if you have insurance or when your insurance is going to run out. And I was like, I don't know. Like at this point, I'm like, I don't know if we have insurance. We're 38 years old at this time. Like health insurance? He's a marathon runner, right? Like, not even in the periphery, right? Of thinking about, and you know, you just put your credit card into a machine and it's just racking, right? And he said, or you can put him on a plane and take him home. He's like, we've done all the tests. I'm pretty sure he's not going to have an aneurysm. It seems like you could potentially fly him home. And if you get him back to your own country, number one, at least you can speak the language. And number two, maybe you'll get better care and at least it'll be covered. Wow. And so I remember sitting there and I was like alone and had to make that decision. And I was like, oh my God, like if he dies on this flight, like all these things, right? Like just,
sure.
It was too much. It was too much for me. My whole internal way of being was imploding. And so I just kind of closed my eyes and I was like, okay, what do you do, Allie? Like, what is the answer here? And it was just like, came through my mind. It was like, get him on a plane. Wow. So I picked up my phone. I booked us two flights that left 3 hours later. We literally ran out of that emergency room to an airport, boarded a plane and flew back to Canada. And that wasn't the end of the journey. I mean, that was the start of a really long journey. So I'm going to pause there because I feel like you probably
I know there's like so much to unpack. Like I still have goosebumps on my arms. And I mean, partly because I was an EMT and firefighter. That was my first career.
Oh, I forgot that.
And so that interaction that you had with his body that was in a coma, you know, and knowing that there was this dire emergency, like it kind of brought me back to some of those moments that I had, you know, with some of my clients. And, you know, it's so interesting that we tend to take on these decisions feeling like, oh my gosh, like, well, what if, what if something happens on the plane and then it's my fault? And, you know, we go through those scenarios, we can't help but do that. But I also feel like at some point, you know, spirit just spoke to you and said, go home. Because I think you can only carry so much of that by yourself. You know, you must have felt so alone there.
Yeah. So, oh, I was so desperately alone.
Yeah.
And so scared. Like, yeah. this visceral fear of feeling like, even like when I took a step, I was afraid, or turning around, or like making it just like no sense of safety at all in my body.
It was gone. It was gone.
Yeah.
It's so incredible, though, that you kept taking the steps anyways. And that, to me, is the epitome of bravery, to be afraid and do it anyways. And you did what you needed to do there. Okay, so that's incredible. I'm so glad that he was okay, we'll say. Yeah. But I'm sure everyone's dying to know, well, okay, well, what was it that happened? And is he normal now? And what does that look like? So would you now catch us up there?
Yeah, for sure. So we got back to Canada. He definitely regressed the whole flight home. He became more delirious, asking more questions, super confused. So we went straight to the university hospital, went to the emergency room. All of the paperwork I had from Japan was in Japanese and nobody could translate it. So it was like this whole new journey. Anyway, they saw Chris. They, you know, did a few blood tests and basically sat me down and were like, again, we know something's not quite right with him, but he's not in life-threatening condition and we're not going to admit him to the hospital. And I was like, what?
It's like almost worse when they can't figure out what it is, like the unknown of like, there's something wrong, but I don't know what it is. So how can we even possibly begin a healing process, right?
Wow. Well, and I think I felt a little gaslit in that moment. Like, am I crazy? Am I making this up? Like, what is going on here? Why is nobody actually like acknowledging that something is severely wrong? And so they sent me, and I remember walking out and I was crying, walking out of the emergency. I was like, holy, like, when is somebody going to like pay attention here to like, this is, we didn't just fly all the way around the world in like 48 hours for no reason, right? And so I went home and I was back within 6 hours. He was just in a terrible state. Same thing. They were like, yeah, we can't admit him. We don't have a bed for him. And so I remember walking out and calling his mom and having a complete mental breakdown. And then being back within 3 hours, and I just stood at the triage desk and I was just like, I'm not leaving until you get a neurologist, like not an ER doc. I need a neurologist to come down and look at my husband. Then you might get me to go away. But I get the sense when a neurologist sees him that he's going to have a different opinion, or she. And so they sent us across the street to urgent neuro care, the U of A, which we saw a doctor who told us that he probably, I know, we still walked across the street.
I know. I'm like, I'm like, why wasn't that done immediately? Like, that's where my mind goes, you know, but that's a whole nother conversation of our medical system.
It's such a failure of, and that's a whole nother story, but I really did experience that with Chris. And it's scary for me now to think, oh man, if something happens to me or something else happens to Chris, like I used to have faith and believe that our system would catch us and it didn't catch him. So basically the neurologist said, you probably have an encephalopathy, which is a bite you get from a mosquito in Japan, which causes this delirium. And he's like, you know, essentially he'll be better in 4 to 6 weeks. He's like, I know it seems really crazy right now, but it's all going to subside. He's like, your brain, like the infection and the swelling in your brain will come down. It will all be all good. And I was like, no medication, no hospitalization, no nothing. So they sent us home and it was like living with a patient with severe dementia or Alzheimer's. So I had to watch that my husband didn't walk out the front door and get lost, that he didn't leave the stove on, that, you know, on and on and on and on. These things went on. So you can imagine 6 weeks in my house was pretty freaking intense. And then at the end of that 6 weeks, I was like, you're not better. So what ended up happening was he lost the memory centers in his brain. So that severe delirium did calm down. But he has no short-term memory and a pretty spotty long-term memory at best still to this day. So he's never worked a day again since that day in Japan. And our life has taken a complete left or right turn, whichever turn you want to take. But it looks...
A different direction either way. Yeah. Wow. Okay. And so he still can function fairly normally. But again, his memory is not... where it could be in terms of things that he's done. And he remembered you, obviously, like there was some familiarity he had with you. So he knows that, like, yeah, she's my wife.
It's intense. I mean, like, he literally can be doing something and turn around and completely forget what he was doing. So right. We have the memory aids around our house. You know, okay. he needs maps to get around the city. Yeah. He needs reminders. He has to take a picture where he leaves things or else he'll never find it again. Like, there is a lot of okay. ways in which he now has to live that make his life quite challenging, to be honest.
Yeah. Wow. And so do they still not really know what caused it? Like, they said the mosquito bite, but they were just kind of guessing, I feel like, on that even.
Yeah, I think so. And now they call it functional neurological disorder, which I'm sure you know is we don't know. So
let's just blanket diagnose it with this. So
I mean, really, we kind of hit the end of any kind of healthcare within Canada and Alberta. We ended up going to the States and trying some different neurological treatments with some result, but he would have had to keep going. And, you know, the probability of having the money to do that ongoing is just not. So now it's a matter of, like, what does life look like now? Right.
Yeah.
And how do we figure that out? And then in all of this, where this whole story started, once we kind of got through the acute phase or the onset of this illness, I started to be like, what about our businesses?
Oh, right. Those. Yeah.
Right. And so I went back, obviously, without him and, you know, very quickly had a nervous breakdown because it was time for me. Learned some lessons in my life as to what it meant to show up and show up for me, truly. And in all of that, I had this, like, I often call it like the dark night of the soul. I don't know if you use those words, but this walking through this journey of transition into a new woman that I didn't want to leave that old woman. I loved her. I loved where I was. I loved everything I had. And it was like, I was like feverishly holding on. And then my feet were getting pulled through the tunnel. And I fought it, Deanne. I fought it so hard. But I was no longer the same woman.
Well, and I get that because you're like grieving so much of that life that you thought you were living, right? And that version of yourself too, right? We get so attached to that. So I don't blame you for like holding on for dear life. You know, it is fascinating though how much we do that though and how much we create suffering for ourselves in the unwillingness to let go. So tell me about what happened for you to be able to let go.
Well, it really was the moment I had the nervous breakdown. This was so weird for me because I hadn't ever really experienced something like this before. But I went into work one day, went to get out of my car and like froze, couldn't get out of my car. And then all of a sudden it was this like overwhelm of emotion. And that not just like sitting in my car crying, like we're talking like heaving, like head on the steering wheel, being like just over. Uncontrollable. And I remember being like, holy shit, I cannot go in and run this meeting right now. Like, I can't show up in front of these leaders like this. And so I remember calling into one of my coworkers, one of my peers, and he was like, are you sitting in the parking lot? I was like, can you come out? I just need to talk to you for a minute. And he was this really sweet guy. And I just thought, here's what I thought. I thought he'll come out, he'll pat me on the back, tell me to pull my crap together and get me in there to run the meeting, right? I was like, he'll be my fanboy, right? Anyway, he comes out and I remember he opens the driver's side door and he kind of leans down beside me and he's like, what? He just kind of like puts his hand on my leg and he's like just waiting. And then eventually through like disgusting snot, crying, all the things, I say to him, like, I just don't think that I can do this. Like, I don't know how to do this. And he was like, you don't have to. And that's also okay. And I was like, mind blown.
I'm getting teary-eyed in him giving you that permission.
Yeah. He still doesn't even realize, I think, how important that moment was. You know, like we often don't realize how pivotal we are in other people's lives. And I remember talking to him being like, it's actually okay that I'm not okay.
It's okay.
Because I am dying inside right now. And if I could actually like acknowledge that, like instead of having to keep put on this armor and this brave face and showing up.
Yeah.
Oh my God, could you imagine how much better my life could be?
Yeah. Wow.
So I didn't go to work. He covered for me. I remember I started driving home and I was like, I can't go home. I couldn't go home because if I went home, I had to take care of Chris. And I was like, I need to take care of me right now.
Wow.
And so I remember driving to my sister's house and I was like, I'm going to beep, boop, boop your code. And she's like, okay, you're creeping into your house. And I remember I went into her basement and I sat on the couch and I think I cried for another couple hours. And then I just passed out. Like I was just completely done. So I don't think I'd slept, you know, in months.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and I remember sitting up on the couch and she still wasn't home yet. And it was kind of like getting dark. It was the fall. And I was like, if I don't figure this out, I'm not going to make it. And Chris isn't going to be okay. And our companies aren't going to be okay. But the root of it all is like me. Like I'm actually the joint in all of this. And if I'm not well, none of this is going to work. And I had this moment where I was like, holy crap. And so I remember closing my eyes and taking this like deep breath and exhaling. And I was like, felt just like a minuscule better, like 1% better. But it was the first time I'd actually taken a breath in I don't even know how long. And it was enough for my mind to clear, just enough to be like, you need to go figure this out. And so that's what I did. I started the healing journey and I started trying to figure out what my life was going to look like and how I was going to take care of myself and how I was going to come back into a more calibrated state where I was like happy and whole again, because I was so fractured. I was so fractured.
Yeah. Wow.
And that, I mean, is a whole nother journey, which brought me to you.
I love this story so much because I think it's so relatable on so many different levels. You know, even if, you know, someone's partner didn't have some sort of neurological disorder, there might have been a cancer, there might have been a depression, there might have been any other thing that had come up that caused the pivot. And as you know, I really believe that God just has this amazing ability to show us the way, even if it doesn't feel like the way at the time. And so this then allowed you to say, we're going to let go of these franchises and I'm going to now start my own thing. Is that correct? Is that what happened there?
Yeah. Well, I started healing myself. And in that healing of myself, I realized who I was as a woman, what I value had shifted. And this old version of me that I loved so much was now in this like bubble in the past and I couldn't access her anymore.
Right.
And so I had to be like, who am I? Who am I now? And what do I want for my life? And truthfully, Deanna, I wasn't super clear even when I left Joe's, but I knew Joe's wasn't the answer. And how hard for an organization to not just lose one leader, but two. I mean, we didn't even talk about the culture we built and the connection we had with those 550 people. Like it was everything to us and it was so much to them. And so there was a lot of grief and loss mixed in with all of this, but so much like beautiful transformation, like the chrysalis of the butterfly, right? Coming out of the cocoon. And not just for me, like for so many people in this experience.
Wow. And so did you guys sell everything then? Like did the whole company kind of, you sold off all of your management, everything that you were running then?
So we still have some share of hold. So we're just silent partners now. And so really the only involvement I have at this point is I work with one of the leaders. So I do some coaching and just help.
Brilliant. You still could keep your foot in the door after building all of that stuff, which I think is really lovely because, you know, when you dedicate your whole life for like, what, 20 years, you guys were part of that OJ's family. By the way, I love OJ's. I love that I get to pick sides. That's like the best ever. Anyway, point being, though, how beautiful that in that letting go, then it created your new venture of what you're doing, because I think that you are such an inspirational leader. And so tell us about the Inspired Leader and how that has kind of come to light now.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's been a really interesting journey. And this, like, back to this idea of being guided, I've tried to be really open about what I feel called to or what feels called to come into the business. I originally started it as an executive coaching company. I wanted to work with female leaders and entrepreneurs because I knew how hard it was for me. Yeah. I mean, yeah. We didn't even talk about that part, but how hard it was for me as a woman, one of the only women in the business, right? And figuring out all of those things and how important it is for us as women to support each other. And so I really just wanted to support women. And out of that, so much came. So, I mean, I started building communities for women to come together to support each other in their careers, both personally and professionally. I started building events. So running these, I would call them large scale women's leadership and wellness events in and around Edmonton. So my next one is October 17th and 18th at the Royal Glenarmouth. There'll be 250 women in this room. So it's like, it's a big, big deal. And it's a highly sought after event. Like, these events are selling out like months in advance, and it's creating these spaces for women that we all so deeply need, right? And so that's been like kind of like that part of the journey. And then another part of the journey has been speaking, which I really resisted because I was like, I don't really want to be a speaker.
But you're so good at it.
Yeah, that's the reason. They're like, you know, it's already so well. And I'm like, yeah, I do. Anyway, I resisted it. I felt like it wasn't me. I felt like it, and it wasn't part of old Allie, right? But it's new Allie, because new Allie actually has so many beautiful stories to share and sees what I actually see in a story, which I think is so impactful, is how it helps somebody else. So many people tell their stories to tell a story.
Right.
But when you can actually see the vision or the through or the golden thread of how that can support somebody else, you're already kind of identifying that, right? Like anybody who has had a loved one who is sick, anybody who has been a caregiver, I'm sharing the story because my hope is that you can see that there is actually a way through if you're stuck, if you're burnt out, if you're feeling, oh my God, I don't know how to get through this. We can make it through it, but it requires a different way of thinking and support and connection and collaboration, right? So I spend a ton of my time on the road, almost 50% of my time now speaking at women's conferences, leadership conferences, wellness events. I'm off to Orlando in a couple of weeks here to speak at an event with a bunch of social media celebrities. So that's going to be a really, really interesting adventure. But I'm just having a lot of fun doing that and just trying to be really authentically showing up as a woman in the world and hopefully inspiring other women to do the same, because I think women are positioned to just bring a lot of magic to the world right now if we get into it. So
yes, we are. Oh, I love all of this. And I love that you are letting your light shine in the way that you have been called to. You know, I often tell my clients there's a big difference between being driven and being drawn. And so the old Allie might have been very driven, but the new Allie is very much in the drawn energy of like letting spirit guide her and letting that love lead her and call her in, or to be magnetic and invite those opportunities in. And I think it's such a beautiful way to work, isn't it? Because you end up, it feels so much more enriched. There's no forcing. There's no trying anymore. It's like, oh, does that feel good? Right. And really leaning into that. And I mean, I spent most of my time in business hitting my head against a brick wall, you know, doing everything everyone told me to do and trying all the things and working 24/7 and over delivering and, you know, exhausting myself. And it was not sustainable, nor was it filling my cup, so to speak. So, Allie, I know that you learned a lot of lessons through this process, but if you had to pick kind of like your three main big ones, what would those be? What do you want the audience or the world to know based on your experience or, you know, based on what you've gathered in terms of divine wisdom through the process? I'd love to hear what you have.
I would say number one for me is, I know it's not always easy, especially as for us as women, but it's not always easy for everybody. But when you can remind yourself that your authenticity is who you are, the universe is going to bring to you what is for you. And you're going to see the success you want. You're going to have the experiences you want to have in your life. The moments when I'm out of alignment, and it happens because I'm human, we oscillate.
Yeah.
But the moments where I'm out of alignment, I don't get the speaking engagement in Orlando. I don't, right? Like, those things don't come into my life. But when I'm living authentically, when I'm leaning into my values, when I'm showing up with that open heart, I really feel that just the beauty of life comes in, and the experience we were meant to have is there. So I think there's something really beautiful in that. And we often armor up. People tell us we have to be a certain way. It's all bullshit. Right? Just be you. I always be like, I always say, weird is the new cool. Just be weird. Be you. Like, it's all
goofy, weird, ridiculous, whatever that is. Love that. Permission to be who we are, right? Like, to me, that permission slip was really important to me. I didn't have that, you know? So again, I was that people pleaser and always putting on that, you know, I'll say even facade, you know? And it's been so beautiful for me to just be a bit more vulnerable, a bit more of who I am. And, you know, as you know, they've done studies now. They know authenticity vibrates even higher than love.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because in order for us to be authentic, it means we also have to love ourselves in our wholeness, the shadows and the all. Yeah. So I love that you're bringing this idea of getting back to who are you, and are you expressing yourself the way that you truly want to express yourself? And I got to tell you, there's lots of times where I like choked it back and didn't say the thing and didn't stand up for myself.
And even still today. Right. Like, I had one of those this week where somebody challenged me in a way that shut me down, that set my fight or flight off. And I had time to process it. And luckily now with the work that I do, like inside of myself, I was able to take a few minutes and be like, okay, how do I authentically want to handle this right now? Instead of just like shutting down and shutting off like the old Allie would have, do I want to say something? Do I not want to say something? What feels genuine and integrous to me in this moment? And I allowed myself to do that. And it was like taking my power back, because it's like, no, there is space for me in this world too. And there's space for you.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I love that you shared that. I had a similar experience this week. I was at a wedding and I was doing grace for the wedding. And right before I was about to do grace, one of the other people who was also helping to do some coordinating and that sort of thing was like, oh, so you'll just have people stand for grace? And my gut said, no. And yet I was like, oh, okay. And then I took a breath and I was like, that's not authentic to me in this experience of what I'm trying to create here. And so I said, is that what the bride wanted? So I just asked if that was coming from the bride to make sure. And she said, oh, no, I just thought it made more sense. And I said, I feel like sitting down might be better. And she said, oh, I'm totally good with that. Yeah, go ahead. You do your thing. And it was so interesting to me, because the old version of me would have also been like, and I know it seems like a simple thing, like a silly thing, but for me, I felt so empowered. I was like, oh, I stood up for myself. I didn't just do what they told me to do. I actually stood up for myself. And so that was such an empowering feeling. So when we can be true and genuine to our truth in a way that is kind and loving, we don't have to be mean, right? To stand in our truth and to speak up. And
that's
so
what comes through your truth.
That isn't right. Then that takes,
you're going to be a jerk about it. You're not in your truth.
Then you're not. Exactly. Right. And so it's that space of grace that really comes to the surface in those moments of being willing to say, that doesn't feel quite right for me. Is it okay if I do this, you know? And so, yeah, I love that. Love that advice. Okay. Next one.
I'll do them faster for you. Next one's fear and love. So anything I do, especially in my business, I ask myself if this feels expansive or contractive. If something feels attractive, it's a no for me. And if something feels expansive, like it's opening my heart, it's a yes. And so I pay attention to that a lot in my business because I'm building it right now, but also in my life. And so I really try to let my heart, my intuition guide me through my experiences now. And I find that really powerful. And I just think when we live in a space of our hearts and love, again, so much more is possible. The infinite possibilities of the universe. I know I sound like, oh, you're okay with it, but the infinite possibilities of the universe.
This is what I talk like all the time, okay? So it's all good. you're totally safe.
I can't walk into a room of leaders and say this stuff, right? Like, I have to kind of tiptoe around it. And by the end, I was like, you're such a heart-centered leader. I'm like, yeah, because we all need to start thinking more this way, because the beautiful experiences that come out of it are so magical if we could just open our hearts to it. So like thinking about love first, like what is expansive for you? What feels like it fills you up? And if it doesn't, it's not for you. Don't feel the need to bring it in, right?
Yeah, I love that. And I love to ask the question, you know, does this feel constricting? Do I feel like I'm shrinking or am I expanding? I love that. That's a powerful one because I think oftentimes, again, we do things because we think other people want us to do them or we need to do them. Like we get that false responsibility or that false sense of obligation that oftentimes comes from us, right? Yes. And then we get ourselves into these spaces where we do feel constricted and we're like, why the heck did I say yes to this thing? I don't know, even want to do the thing. So that simple question can save a lot of suffering, I would think. Yeah. Okay, number three.
Number three, I would say, is spend time inside. So like when I talked about that moment when I sat on my sister's couch and I actually took a breath and I closed my eyes, I spent a lot of time inside now. Spent a lot of time alone, thinking, meditating, being mindful, whatever that is. I think it's different for each of us. But it almost makes me want to cry saying it now, but I feel like I know myself so well now that I can honor all of the pieces of me. But I don't think we can do that if we don't give ourselves that quiet time and that space to really learn who we are and really own us. And again, the light, the dark, all of it, whatever. I'm sometimes a jerk. Like, I get it, right? But also having grace for all of that experience of being human and honoring it and just feeling blessed by the experience of it. So,
you know, I love that. And I just want to clarify for the audience, when she says inside, she says means inside your spirit, inside your being, inside your vessel, not inside the house. We still encourage nature, of course, but I just wanted to make sure that was real clear, although I think they would have gotten it eventually. But the point of that is I don't think that ignoring those parts of ourselves is doing anyone any good. And most of the population is. Most of the population is living very extrinsic of themselves. You know, they're living outside of themselves. And you're right that the value of getting to know ourselves and to love ourselves, like that's unconditional love. And if we can carry unconditional love for ourselves, then we have it for the rest of humanity. You know, this, my mission of world compassion comes to life because we love ourselves enough to give ourselves the grace and the mercy that is required when we're not, you know, in a state of perfection or perceived greatness, if you will, because we are human and we have these parts of ourselves that might be more difficult to love, but boy, oh boy, I'm going to love those parts of myself too. I recently went through a breakup. And so I became, you know, single again for the first time in a really long time. And being with myself at first was really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So can we talk about that discomfort for just 2 minutes? I know that like we're at our time, but I just feel like that's so important because when I first started just sitting with myself, I found the like self-criticism version of myself coming in and being like, look at all these things wrong with you. And, you know, really beating up on myself. And then I kind of got that put aside. And then I was like, okay, now I'm just with myself. And I'm like, why does it feel so freaking difficult? Like, why do I want to distract myself? You know? What were some of your hacks for getting through that discomfort of being with self?
I think the world we live in has really messed us up. Like it is so intense. It is so external. The focus to go inside is completely gone. Right. And so when we stop connecting with our inner selves, our hearts, whatever, I always call it my heart, but like whatever you want to call it, when you stop connecting with your soul, the person you are, it becomes scary to go back there. That is actually scary. Like I remember when I started meditating many years ago, when I was young, I was actually sexually abused. And so I had this fear for many years, Deanne, that somebody was standing behind me and that somebody was going to attack me and that like I couldn't drive my car at night. I would have to like check all the corners. And even when I was driving down the street, I'd feel like somebody was there. So I had this intense fear. Now, luckily, through a lot of work, I figured out how to like handle that in my life. But when I started to close my eyes and go in, all that came back. There was all of a sudden this like darkness. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, I don't want to be here. This is freaking scary. But I don't know now about that. That's, and I still get that fear even today. Sometimes it'll twinge, something will happen, whatever. But on the other side of that fear is like the most beautiful space you will ever be in. You will never be on that, in that space in the exterior world ever. Yeah. And it calms your nervous system. It allows you to see things differently. It softens your approach. It allows you to connect with your authenticity. And so, yeah. And I mean, there's lots of hacks, but I think like for, in the simplest term, close your eyes and take a breath.
Yeah. You never
actually do that. Right.
I'm going to take a breath right now. You know, like, oh, doesn't that feel so good? It's so simple and yet, you know, so effective.
I will also tell you that my dog farted. As I took that breath, I was like, oh, I want this to be so nice right now, but it's not.
That, like, the irony of life, though. I guess that's the analogy for life, though, isn't it? Sometimes you take a breath and it stinks like shit, and other times you take a breath and so heavenly, and our job is to just keep breathing because there's going to be more of the heavenly ones than there are the ones that are stinging like shit. So, you know, how beautiful is that? I love that you shared that, and that it's normal for us to feel the discomfort, you know, and just give ourselves permission to just be in it. You know, for me, I had a run of days after day where I just felt like crying, and I just gave myself permission to cry. I didn't overanalyze it. I didn't, you know, resist it. I just allowed it. And I think even in just that allowance of like, yeah, I am uncomfortable. This is uncomfortable, but it's okay. Because eventually what happens, folks, is that you will come into comfort. And in fact, you're going to crave that. And it's, right? Like, it's going to become a healthy gift for you. I promise, Allie promises, it will become a gift for you if you guys are willing to sit through some of that discomfort. Oh, man. Okay. We can have hours and hours of chat time, I'm sure, but we're going to wrap things up for today. And so, Allie, if someone's like, oh, my God, I love this girl too, how do I get a hold of her? And what have you got in store?
Yeah. I mean, I have a website, theinspiredleader.com. So you can just go there and find out all the things that I do. But I mean, if you're in the Edmonton area and you're listening to this, we do have that big event coming up in October. It's almost 40% sold out right now, but there's still some tickets. So like, amazing. Yeah, it's called to become, be in a space with like women who see the world the same way I do. I think that might be a really interesting way just to meet each other. So,
well, you know what's so interesting? I just turned down an event because it made me feel constricted.
Good for you.
And it was that same weekend. Oh. So now I'm like, oh, maybe I'm supposed to go to Allie's event. So it's on radar. So I'm going as soon as we get out this call, I'm going to go explore it because I really would love to be in your space more. And I know that you bring so much value to the table. So thank you, Allie, for taking time out of your busy schedule. It's such a gift to be in your presence. You really do inspire the rest of us. So thank you for walking your authentic path. Thank you for listening because, you know, spirit's always calling, isn't it, after all? So thanks for listening. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of When Spirit Calls. Until next time, be well. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
So happy you could join us today. And we hope that you found comfort and inspiration with wherever you are at right now. If you feel you received a gift in today's message, please pass that gift along to a loved one by sharing this episode with them. To continue this conversation, please join me at rosehope.ca. And when you do, be sure to access your free gift by signing up for the When Spirit Calls newsletter. I'm looking forward to connecting with you again soon.